Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was more interested in what you said about, well, you had to be good back in 95.
Oh, right. our era, when you started out, you had to be good. You had to prove that you had the chops to, you know, go the distance in the club and do the heavy lifting. And as, you know, as society evolves, as the entertainment world evolves, now you've got to quantify that you have a following on social media.
To get booked.
Yeah, to get booked. Mm. And that's just the nature of the business. That's I guess, how as with anything, it works. You know, football was the working class guy's game, and then big money came into it and started pricing people out. We've all got to stay ahead of it. So what you've done with your Instagram and with your podcast is remarkable. So well done, man. You're leading the way. And
thanks, mate.
This is exciting.
It's the new way of doing stuff. Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I am joined in the podcast studio by the one and only Danny Ward.
As always.
And it's a guest episode. We've got Imran Yusuf in the house.
Imran Yusuf.
Thank you very much.
Imran, would you want to move the mic slightly closer? I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
Because Sue's sort of sitting quite far forward.
I'm really impressed by your setup, guys. What I'm more impressed by is the fact that you've had a piano intro with a piano in front of you that you didn't play.
there's a story behind that. Because at one point, Mark used to hold the microphone just at the speaker bit there.
Yeah.
But then when you have to put it back, it makes like a sort of a crumpling noise when you put... So I thought, why don't I just record it?
Yeah.
And then this is... It's an ornamental keyboard now. Mm.
It's a desk.
But if we were sitting here without this keyboard, just in these chairs, it would feel pretty weird, wouldn't it?
All right, yeah, it would. I like it. So it's now just a table.
It's just a table.
It's a
good piece of kit, this, as well, this Yamaha.
Yeah. You were talking about like the new way of doing things.
Yeah.
Have you, because I haven't seen you for a while, had you sort of stepped away a little bit or not done so much?
I guess it's a case of that. It's just things are changing. I've gotten older. I'm no longer... there's a moment where you become hot property for a while and all the heat's on you, and then that fades away and new people come in. That's just the nature of the business.
Because you were, well, I remember when I started, you've been going, I think, a little while, but you were doing well in the competitions when I first started. And then you did the, you got nominated in Edinburgh as well.
Yes. The nomination came 2010.
Okay, cool.
And then things were, you know, really busy for a while. And branched off, got an acting agent, a proper acting agent. Which is amazing because I'm not a trained actor. It was all off the back of doing stand-up. Mm. So a bit of acting work came in.
You're quite animated on stage, so I guess anyone watching that would be like, actor, right?
For comedy. And now what's happened is that I'm going up for more serious roles where they're like less of the silly faces, less of the, you know, over-expression.
I've
been around, I've been working. Sometimes things might seem quiet, but then a nice juicy corporate comes in, work comes in, a bit of telly comes in. So I've been around, always working on my craft. That's something I've really been passionate about, because especially people for, like yourself, who does short jokes or one-liners, it's all about the craft of work, you know, making the words count. You're not going up there, all right, so what's that all about? You're not wasting anyone's time. Every sound that comes out of your mouth, every syllable that comes out of your mouth is purposeful. And so I have a massive respect for the craft, having previously, before comedy, have come from video games. And so a great video game is designed very precisely for you to have to elicit a very specific experience, even though at the whole time it gives you the tools to play the game how you want to play. But what I love about comedy is that the moment you get up on stage, the words that you're saying
are instrumental to making the joke work. You're not getting away with charm or getting away with being famous. You're going, no, I am a jokesmith.
Yes.
And I'm going to show you just how beautiful this craft is.
Yeah.
And that's what's amazing to see. And I love watching. I love watching other comics. I often hang about, go watch other comedians and go, oh, wow, I really love what you said there. I love what you did there. I love how you know, the misdirection and the play on words. So I'm a bit of a nerd, whether it's video games or comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a bit of a nerd.
So you know how to code as well?
No. I got into the games industry off the back of just being a massive gamer.
Right. So what, if you're working in the gaming industry and not coding, what do you do?
Well, first, my first job in the games industry was a games analyst, which is effectively a dog's body for the office, right?
Yeah,
Look, he knows a lot about games, but we're just going to kind of let him learn the ropes by doing the Lola. I never made tea, but like I was going out. So I'd learn to play our games, know everything about our games, go out to the journos, evangelize how great our games were, even when they weren't, making sure, meeting with the likes of Microsoft, Nintendo and Sony with our account managers to make sure that our game came out on time. So I was in production. Then I became an assistant producer. So that's publishing, video game publishing. Then I went into video game development.
Oh, wow.
I worked on the last massive game that I worked on. When I say massive, was Battalion Wars 2 for the Wii. So we had Nintendo of Japan come to our offices in London Bridge. And when they came into the office, man, just like the fear in us, because you're amongst gaming royalty. These are serious people.
And it's like sharing the room with someone like Lee Evans or something when you knew someone. Yeah.
Like a huge, it's Nintendo of Japan. Like Shigeru Miyamoto didn't come over, but it was Hiro Yamada, Terasaki-san, and I forgot the other guy. And then they had like a younger guy come in with them. But we had them in our office for a few months and, you know, we're making a Nintendo game. We are effectively what we would then be called, I guess, a second party developer, because we were making exclusively for Nintendo alongside Nintendo, even though it was made in London.
I was going to say, that's the dream, isn't it? To work in something that you're a fan of.
You've
done that with both, haven't you? You've done that video games and you've done it with stand-up.
But it's funny you should say that about it being a dream, because notoriously working in video game design is fucking treacherous, isn't it? And there's a term called crunch, which refers to the amount of unpaid
overtime. It's just unbelievable amounts of overtime. Like
extra lives.
Now in the games industry, apparently that's like frowned upon. That we don't want people. You know, if your team is doing lots of crunch time, that's because there's been a production error. You know, you can't be like, right, we're just going to work all the hours that God sends to get this game out. No, you know, understand that this is the amount of time it takes to make a game and that your staff need the right amount of rest and break away from being in front of their monitors all day.
Yeah.
So back when I was in the games industry, we would do loads of unpaid overtime for weeks and if not months on end, and it was brutal. I wanted to be a video games designer. I wanted to be Shigeru Miyamoto, right? In my head, I was like, you've got to shoot for like the biggest goal that you can think of. And I was like, man, I'm going to have to hang around here and earn my stripes. And then even then, it's just going to take forever. And I never really got there. Even though I worked in the games industry for like over 10 years. But with comedy is that you have complete creative control, right? And as long as you've made people laugh, in that instant, you're on. You've got the job. You're in charge. So you're on stage. No one's telling you what to do. You don't have to sign. You know, you don't have to convince your manager and ask for time off, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's
the best.
And even though it is just 20, I mean, to us, it's just 20 minutes. Yeah. But do you remember when you were new? Wow, 20 minutes. 20 minutes.
How am I ever going to be able to do that? And also, I would like to say that it isn't just 20 minutes. It's the 7-hour drive.
Well, that's it.
That day. It's the hours of writing.
I wonder if you remember one of the first times I met you and where we went.
I do remember it. It was you, me, and Colin Cole.
Colin Cole, God rest his soul.
Yeah, God rest his soul. Massive man.
Yeah, in my T-Reg polo.
Yeah, really.
Colin Cole, if you wouldn't know, he passed away recently.
His legs coming past
and
your
he
head
was,
from the back.
I mean, he was damn near 7 foot.
Yeah, he was down 7 foot.
And a big boy as well.
I didn't know. Like when I saw the email, I was like, I don't recognize Colin Cole, even though I had actually seen him before. And I just thought, well, you know what? I'm going to turn up early and I'm going to sit in the passenger seat. Right, and I turned up early, and then Colin Cole turned up, and I go, "Yeah, I'm going to be in the booth. Don't worry about me.
My T-Reg polo. You'd be in the bloody roof rack. T-Reg polo to Halifax and back in a night.
Wow.
And then I remember we got back into London for about what, 3 o'clock in the morning. He shot off to a casino.
Really?
Old school. Old school, mate.
Wow. Yeah. Respect.
Oh, man, bless him. He was incredible to watch on stage. I remember the first time I saw him live was at Up the Creek, back in the old Up the Creek with Malcolm Hardy, Up the Creek. And he was incredible. He absolutely smashed that audience. It was incredible.
So did you go and watch comedy?
To heckle him.
Yeah, you would.
Did you do comedy before you... Did you go and watch comedy a lot before you did comedy?
No.
Okay.
So in the mid to late 90s, we moved house, got cable, because we were on a street that had cable.
Oh, right.
And I discovered on Paramount Comedy Channel at midnight, there was a show called Comedy Store, Live at the Comedy Store.
Mm.
And after that, there was Jonglers, Live at Jonglers or something. Mm. And I'd watch that every night, back to back, going, wow. I didn't know stand-up comedy was a thing that happened in places. I thought maybe it only happened on television.
Mm.
And I was like, and in my head, I was like, there's like a shop that you can go into, right?
Yeah.
And a person gets up on stage and they start telling jokes and that's their job. And I'm like, I should be doing that. That's what I want to do. And that's when I was about 16, 17 years old.
Mm.
And then I did my first ever gig when I was 20 for Jeff Mirza. He did like an Asian comedy night at Harrow Arts Centre. And I gave it a go and I was like, but you know what? I want to go to the games industry. That's the thing I've got to do first.
So you did have a little try.
Two gigs.
Yeah.
Of 5 minutes.
Can you remember
each.
Any of the material you did in those gigs?
A little bit, and none of it is good enough or suitable enough to repeat ever again.
A different time as well back then.
It was a different time, and I got away with charm. I was the young kid who was jumping up on this comedy show, and people felt.
Did you do the dinosaur?
No, dinosaur was not a.
Because this is what I know. I remember you for because you did the T Rex, right? Is it T Rex?
Right, so
or raptor?
It is what you think it is. To me, it's a velociraptor.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
In my head, it's a velociraptor. But somebody's like, oh, it's the T-Rex, the velociraptor. So I lived in America when I was a kid, illegally, which is like my claim to fame.
Mm.
And in the summer of 1993, Jurassic Park came out. I didn't know what the film was about. I just went to the cinema to watch
terrified.
It. Right? And I sat there and I went, oh my God, that's a real dinosaur. That's a real dinosaur. And then I came back to England and the film hadn't come out yet. Jurassic Park hype was still, because we were like months behind. So I was the American kid in school, or I was the American kid to come back now because my accent had changed and I'd seen Jurassic Park. And because the animation of those dinosaurs was, I'm going to say realistic, because we never really know how they moved. I used to chase my little cousins around the house pretending to be a dinosaur.
Wow.
So I've been doing it since I was 13. And then one day, as I started to get, and then I came back, and then when I kind of transitioned out of, it was a slow transition out of video games into comedy. Once I got my head around being good, making the words count. My whole thing is about have a killer five. The first thing you got to do as a comedian is have a killer five. Make sure that 5 minutes is just pure, it's really good. Nice to be here. Keep it going for your MC. Where are you from? None of that nonsense. Get on with the work.
Yeah.
And so I had this very aggressive attitude to it. And then as I started building my set, I went, let me try that dinosaur impression. Let me see what happens.
It's a really good impression. How did you go into it in the first time you did it?
I think maybe the first time I did it, I think I just kind of just did it. But then I was like, how can I justify?
It's about this mad, isn't it?
And I just thought, it's about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are old. And then something about, and I was in my early 20s, and the allure of an older woman was, you know, it's a thing. I think for most guys, like, you know, when you're in your early 20s, a woman who's like 35 or something is like, ooh. And so I was like, maybe I'll justify, oh, I like older women, but the last woman I went out with was so old, she was a dinosaur. And then that justifies a dinosaur impression.
Yeah. So when you did it the first time without the setup, you just got a vibe that, oh, they quite like this. There's something in this.
Yeah, once people started laughing, going, and they laughed far more than I anticipated they would. Because I was like...
How did you decide how long to do it for? Do you just do it till they stop laughing?
No, I don't milk it too much, because then it's...
Please tell me you still do it.
No, I stopped doing it. After I did it on Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow...
Hang on.
Clang!
Yes, lovely.
And then I did it on tour
once that was done, it's extinct now.
Yeah.
However, every now and then, when I try to do socio-political material now, when I'm like, hey, look at how serious and clever I am with the words that I'm saying about the things that matter to me most. Yeah. And I do it, and audiences just be silent, and somebody goes, dinosaur.
Oh, nice.
Once in a blue moon that happens, I was like, guys, this stuff is a boost. No, don't care.
It's like Ricky Gervais with it, they sat him in, do the dance.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. So he's got loads of notes here. And we're already halfway through.
Oh, let's do them. Because you were just, you were emceeing. I looked at the, it came up, the lineup of Up the Creek, and you were hosting it, right?
Oh, yeah, just this weekend.
Yeah, I was like, there's a gap on Saturday. I was like, brilliant. So I messaged you straight away, and you got back, which is awesome.
Oh, bless, thank you.
So you're, how was the gig? Was it good?
Oh, it was great. We had an electric weekend. All the acts did well. You know, Up the Creek, like proper comedy clubs that are run properly.
Yeah.
They've got the right vibe, and if you know how to play them, it can just be from start to finish. It's just wild. People are like, this is an extraordinary experience we've all had together.
Yeah.
So it was a great weekend at Up the Creek. Also, they're one of the few comedy clubs that has decent food.
Oh.
Like, well, you know, so the comedy store's got a good diner.
They've got burgers in the diner.
It's called Up the Greek. They've got Greek cuisine as part of their restaurant, and it's great. So, there's a few. There's three clubs that come to mind. Comedy Store Diner's good. Up the Creek, Up the Greeks, Diner's good, and the Stand in Newcastle, which used to be a bistro.
Oh, we didn't eat it when we were up there, did we?
Oh, dude, it's excellent.
We've got another date in, so we'll do it.
We'll have to eat double.
So did you when you MC, do you try bits ever, like new bits?
He's just said the three places he likes. Oh, you mean
Well, I'm here for the food. I'm not here for the comedy. I'm here to see what you've got on the
menu. I never used to be able to eat before a gig, like nerves and things, when I started. But as soon as I went full-time comedy and I knew I hadn't got that much money, whenever any food was offered, I'd eat it. I got over that really quick.
Do you know who I got over it from, who told me? James Redmond.
Oh, right.
Because he'd done years and years in Hollyoaks. You get told when you're going to eat, then you're going back and perform. And he just said, I just eat whenever, you know.
Right, yeah.
And I thought, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's just a job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lovely.
I still wouldn't like to eat just before I go on. Do you not?
I do that now.
You do?
So I've discovered this. When I was new, and maybe you've had the same experience, when I was new, I used to run on adrenaline. So I used to go on, blah, 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 and all the energy comes out. But then after you become really good...
And you're doing longer.
Yeah, and you're doing longer sets. But once you're comfortable and you know that you belong at that stage, you're no longer worrying about trying to impress the person who books the gig or any of that stuff. And you just know
you're
got
so
it.
Much better then. Yeah, you're relaxed.
You're relaxed. Absolutely. And then I realised, because I'm no longer using adrenaline in that space, that if I hadn't eaten before, I would sometimes slur my words.
Right.
I was like, what's happening? Oh, right, I'm hungry and I don't have energy. Because I used to be that.
Because I'm like the opposite of you. I try and be as relaxed as possible and don't sort of, dude.
Well, I think so does Imran now, don't you?
I'm happy to eat and then hear my name go on stage and go,
But you're still energetic on stage, though.
Yes, but not in the same way I was when I was on an open spot. When I was an open spot, it was like, look at me.
You have to get the attention. Like you said, that killer 5 minutes.
Well, when I used to go on, I used to speak at 1,000 miles an hour, not pause for breath. In 5 minutes, it is quite catchy, but... You know, you ain't going to be doing
that. You can't do that
forever. You can't do that forever. But then that's how you grow. When you're new, you've got to prove... You know, I've always said you are one of three things to a promoter. You're either a risk, a liability, or an asset. Everybody wants to do comedy, and more so than ever now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so for you to stand out, if you are if you're a liability, you're not getting the gig. If you're a risk, you'd be lucky to get the gig. The promoter has to be desperate.
Yeah.
If you're an asset, right, and you are adding value to the promoter's business, you are getting on the gig. And you do that by,
This is really important, actually, because I remember when I went full-time and I was like just wanting to build that diary up so I'm consistent and, you know, get build up to headlining and things like that. Consistency, I learned, was the most important thing you can do.
I got a book here. Yeah. Who's the? It's called Born Standing Up.
Oh, is that by Steve Martin?
And he says, isn't it? He says, anyone can be great once.
Yeah.
He says the thing is to be, consistent, which is good every night.
Which is why, like, if I do a paid gig or back then, I wouldn't go on with new ideas at all.
Well, you soon learn not to, don't you?
I'd do my 20 minutes that's good, and I'd make sure I try new stuff at a new material night.
And that's even more important, even if you're closing, when, like, people have been there ages, the expectations are higher, they've had a few more drinks, so their focus isn't as sharp.
But if you're now, I will slip in something new. If it's going well,
I'm
like, here's an opportunity to slip
in. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Feel,
you don't want to tank it, do you?
So I've done that a couple of times, where I know, I don't open with it. I don't go, hey, guys, I've come up with something new.
just first, you know, win over the confidence of everyone and go, right, this is good. Let me try and slip in this one
new
gag.
But I think that's absolutely fine. And I always do some new jokes within my set. I actually make it a part of it.
Mm.
But what I think, sometimes I think the Edinburgh setup does restrict some people developing in the clubs, because when people know that Edinburgh's coming, they've got so much material they need to be working in that they will put it in like big chunks in like paid club gigs. And I think if that doesn't work, I think that does have a detrimental effect on you sort of losing work going forward. But it depends what you prioritise. Because by the time they get to Edinburgh, their Edinburgh show will be flying.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean...
You can't use weekend comedy clubs as the testing ground. You can chop a couple of little bits. Anyway, talking a couple of little bits. What have you got here?
Oh, this is... Okay. So I've got... this particular routine, the first time I did it, I got a massive round of applause. I thought, great, this is my new...
This is the most annoying thing, isn't it?
And then I found... This is where I was being... So, all right, without... Because it's part of a big story, which I can't do right now because we haven't got time.
Mm.
But first it would start off with the nonsense things that we all do for charity. Like, we all do stuff for charity because people need help, right? But when we do it in a way that kind of makes us look good and makes us feel good, and raising money for people who need it becomes a secondary thing, it's a bit cheeky. That's, for example, you know, so I did this whole routine about how there are starving people. It's always in Africa, somewhere in Africa, in the whole continent in Africa, there's someone starving and they're not sitting around, you know, what are people going to do? What are these selfless Western capitalists going to do to help us alleviate of our problems? I'll go, well, some of them are going to sit in a bathtub full of baked beans for 24 hours. And everyone's like, wow, well, how many tins of baked beans does it take to fill up a whole bathtub? Well, I don't know, about as many that could feed our entire village.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, and that's
so,
great.
So... It's funny, it's but
not,
then...
I want to say it's great as a bit, yes. Not as as a thing.
I think we took that as red market, hopefully.
And I think...
In hindsight.
The more I was doing it, audiences were starting to go, hold on, I do that. Like, you know, some people are going to run a whole marathon just to help us get clean drinking water. Oh my God, and how many miles will they run to get us clean drinking water? What about the same amount of miles that we walk every day to get clean drinking water?
I've heard you do this.
Right? So, but what I found is that there were some places where people are like, I ran a marathon.
Yeah.
You're shitting on their chips.
And so, ultimately, it's about you doing these good things. You are helping people, but ultimately, in the grand scheme of how the world is run, we're doing it to make ourselves feel good and not necessarily because we truly care about them. And there's the whole thing of, like, if we all paid, you know, if everyone paid the right amount of tax or whatever, that the problems would be solved. Well, they wouldn't, because the people whose job it is to govern how that tax is handed out, don't give it out to the right, you know, right things and to the right causes and to the right people. Mm. I'm just a bit concerned Danny's run away. Have I upset him?
Danny's doing the marathon soon. And he's just got a delivery. He's just got a master delivery of baked beans that just turned up.
Charlie, the other thing then was Charlie was trying to tell me there was a bang on the door and I just didn't know what sign language he was using.
So he's like, do a knock-knock joke.
Yeah.
So ultimately, as I went down this road, it ends up... Now, I did this joke on in Malaysia. It was part of Comedy Central's Stand Up Asia.
Clang!
Right, and...
It's weird, I haven't been asked to do that.
I went out to Malaysia to do this big gag, and I was really proud of it because this joke involved Jackie Chan, who's my hero, right? Love Jackie Chan. And also involved the true story of a family friend of ours who served in Afghanistan in the war on terror.
Mm.
And I had a very uncomfortable conversation with him. And that was a joke about, you know, he was telling me about the realities of what was happening in Afghanistan and what the American soldiers were doing, and the stuff that we may not know about, right? And ultimately, you tell me that, you know, when they weren't fighting, when they weren't terrified for their lives and wondering whether they'll ever see their loved ones again, they would be really bored. And I'd go, what would you do? And he goes, oh, we'd just go buy some DVDs off, like, the local Afghan salespeople. And I was like, all right, what DVDs would you buy? And he's like, I'd buy, like, Jackie Chan films. And I'm like, oh, that's my favorite film. That's my favorite Jackie Chan film. And ultimately, the joke was that whilst he's out there fighting this war on terror against the likes of the Taliban, whatever, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, he's also, you know, the American troops are also out there buying illegal copyright-infringing DVDs, which steal from the American film industry and inadvertently fund terrorism. So thank you. Right, you're giggling here. It's funny. And so the first time I properly delivered that joke, I remember the audience just going wild for it. Now, I did that joke on that show,
And when they broadcast it, they edited it.
Oh, what?
So the punchline doesn't make the American War on Terror look bad.
There we go.
They edited the punchline. So in a way, they took like an earlier punchline from another joke somewhere else.
Yeah.
And stitched that in. And no I was furious. Way.
Did it make any sense, the punchline? And that was just of. The teachers.
Yeah. And I was furious. And I was, you know, on the email, on the phone, like, what have you done here? This isn't right. Yeah. And then that's when everyone just disappears. That's when, like, oh, sorry, we don't know the name of the producer and the people. We don't know where the footage is, et cetera, et cetera. I managed to get the broadcast footage, and I've put it on YouTube, which I've got permission to do. But I edited their butchering of that joke.
Right.
So really made me angry. I was like, because my what I believe has happened is that someone at Comedy Central, even though it's Comedy Central Asia, somebody at Comedy Central who must have been America is like, I'm not going to broadcast a joke that makes the American War on Terror looks bad in any kind of way. So I'm going to do that joke again. I'm going to I'm just going to start doing it again and record it and put it out.
Yeah. When you did the pre-show thing, do they go through the material that you're going to do?
Yes, but...
So they had given it the all clear.
Well... I think, all right, so...
Did you ad-lib a bit?
No, I didn't. It was, so this is in Malaysia. So first they're more concerned about political and religious stuff.
Yes, which we found out in the Sam C, because they're very close to
Singapore.
Singapore. So
Sam, I know Sam from Singapore. Like, cool. I've gigged out there with him as well. I'm aware of, like, you know, I have been censored. Weirdly, I've been censored in Malaysia and in the UAE and in Qatar, all Muslim countries, because... As far as they're concerned, Islam is their religion, and I'm an Indian.
Right.
So even though I'm a Muslim, I'm an Indian, and I'm in their country, so I've got to play by their rules, and my experience isn't valid in their eyes, unfortunately. Okay. That's at least when they're just very touchy. They're not used to the level of freedom of speech that we take for granted in the West.
Mm.
If you were going to go back to the joke...
Just for a second, you know Qatar Airlines? Why? I think they should have been called Air Qatar. There you go. Next.
You just need... You need a strum.
I wasn't even going
to
press
you
it
You need
that.
A strum. You need a little guitar strum to edit in there. That was a guitar. That's a good one. I like
that. So what are you going to say, Daddy?
I like that.
Mark that one down. That's probably more of a clip than mark that one down, Charlie.
I've got more.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, right, I mean, obviously, pulled out of Afghanistan now.
Yeah.
So could you...
How would you go into it?
How would you go into it now?
Oh, it's still a story about how I'm a family friend of ours served in Afghanistan.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
so it's just time.
It's a story about me referring to when he get, you know, he gave cool. me, I was coming back to the UK and he gave me a ride to the airport, and that's when we had the conversation. Cool. And so I'm in a car with him and he's going, I was a soldier, I was a Marine, and I was like, I didn't know this about you. Up until this moment, we're in a car together.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, part of me's just like, I'm really uncomfortable about the conversation that's now about to happen, but he's driving me to the airport for free as a friend, right?
Yeah.
So like, I can't be like, just let me out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, he's a family friend. He told me things that I didn't understand, you know, things that I didn't know about and I didn't appreciate. But ultimately, that was where I found the joke about, you know, you're buying these DVDs and ultimately you've got to think about where that money is circulating back to in the grand scheme of things.
Have you got anything else that isn't going to get us assassinated by the CIA?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. so they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah, I've got quite a few. I've never got this to work. And I think only Star Wars fans really appreciate it.
Oh, wow. Right?
Oh, so, you know, for a long time now, Iran, for some reason, is a bad guy. Well, for obvious reasons. But then at the same time, it seems that America and Israel particularly have been trying to goad Iran into war.
Remember what I said about the CIA?
Yeah. They're trying to go.
They do monitor this podcast.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But the Iranians, they're too slick, right? They're too slick. They know that the West, America and Israel, are trying to goad them into war. They need just, because you can't just got weapons of mass destruction. You've already played that one. You can't do that again, right? But the Iranians are too slick because somewhere in the Iranian Navy, there's an admiral named Akbar. And he's constantly asserting to all of his troops that all might not be as it seems. And I just leave it there. If you're a Star Wars fan, you get a bit. I've had Star Wars fans.
I don't get it.
Have you ever seen Star Wars, Mark?
Yeah, of course I have.
Admiral Akbar.
What's his favourite line?
I don't know who Admiral Akbar. Why? Oh, that's really embarrassing.
He doesn't know.
I have watched it. What's his famous line?
I'm not entirely sure of his famous line, but he's on the dark side, isn't he?
No.
Oh, Christ.
Admiral Akbar, dude, come on.
Now, this
is a trap.
Oh, I know that line.
I should know that because I can see it on your notes.
Well, this is an issue of niche jokes, isn't it? Because you do need to know.
You need to know. You need to be a Star Wars fan. So his favourite line.
Podcast.
So Admiral Akbar is on the side of the rebels.
Oh, I've got that wrong.
Yeah.
Hang on. Has he got like a purple?
He looks like a squid.
That's it.
But it's the name Akbar. Yeah. Which is often used in the context of Allah Akbar or Allah Akbar, as we would say.
Yeah.
Right? Admiral Akbar. Yeah. So there's an admiral somewhere in the Iranian Navy called Akbar. And when I just left it there, Star Wars fans like, it's a trap. Yeah. But it's totally wasted here, and that's why I don't do it anymore.
But that's the trouble. So it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like it's one for you and then one for them. Like, would you leave it in because you like it and not worry that not everyone gets it? Or do you go, it's just not consistent enough within the room?
I think I need to find... If the audience is the right age, right, and I set it up correctly, I reckon I could still do it. I'm going to find a way
to... So it has worked it's just the room's right?
It's worked less than a handful of times.
Right.
But maybe I think I saw someone in the front row and they were wearing a Star Wars t-shirt and I was like, great.
This is the one.
You want to get to one of them Star Wars conventions.
Yeah. To do this one joke.
Do this one joke.
Yeah, they love
it. Put on a Star Wars convention.
Yeah.
Just so you can do that one joke. Because I knew it at Akbar, but it's a trap thing. That's when I lost the... Yeah,
all right.
Okay. I didn't know the "it's a trap" line.
I recognise the "it's a trap."
I recognise Admiral Akbar.
I don't recognise Admiral Akbar. There you go.
See? Okay.
Yeah, that is the trouble. And also, the longer it goes, the less people know Star Wars. Like the youngsters probably they know the modern ones. They probably don't watch.
Oh yeah, young kids now, you know, into their Star Wars 7, 8, and 9. Mm. Unfortunately, they have been ruined.
It's like I'd got some. Well, actually, I did some Harry Potter jokes the other day at a gig, and then I'd done Game of Thrones jokes. And when they're so specific, you assume everyone knows all this stuff, but it really is a small amount of the room that actually knows the information to be able to understand the joke. So annoying.
I think we're also from the generation we grew up with 4 TV channels.
And VHS is where you have to rewatch them.
You'd watch them till they wore out.
So we had a limited, you know. A limited platform of things. So we all like, oh, have you seen it? Of course I've seen it, because it's only one of the 4 things that are available to me.
Yeah.
So we grew up with this kind of village mentality. Compared to now, it's nuts.
This is why you don't get any catchphrases. Not catchphrases, but you know when you get like in a film, just like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Hasta la vista, baby, and all that stuff. You don't get that in any film now.
There's not as much universal recognition, is there?
Because everyone's watching the same thing.
No.
So, which is weird, isn't it? Because that was, everyone knew all the things, but I can't think of a modern film where you go, remember that the line in that?
Yeah.
Can you? That's interesting. I can't. Here's one. I like to use this one. No one ever gets this one. So why don't you make like a tree and get the hell out of here?
Yeah, that's great.
Back to Future. Oh, thank you.
I was more Back to Future than Star Wars.
The Back to Future musical.
I have, yeah.
Oh, I've heard it's great.
Danny and I went on a date together to the Back to the Future musical.
Twice.
You'll love it. It's so good. It's really fun. Yeah.
I went next Wednesday.
Hey!
What's interesting is when I was a kid, I didn't get that joke in the film.
Yeah, me
neither. Make like a tree. Because I didn't know the phrase make like a tree and leave.
Yeah.
So that isn't...
know what the other one is? Made like a banana man? Split.
Yeah. But is that an American thing, or is make like a tree and leave?
I only know it from the film, so I'm assuming
it's a tree and leave. That's one of those
where you have to do a make like a tree and leave. Yeah, but leaves and leave, surely it makes more sense to say leave.
Yeah, it's leave. When you make like a tree and leave.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what it's meant to be.
Oh, I thought it was made like a tree and leaf.
So, but I love that one. Oh, and also what's interesting, we probably have spoke about this on the podcast, but in the Back to Future musical, the people watching it aren't always big Back to Future fans as say I am. So they were experiencing jokes from the film for the first time.
Ah.
Or they'd seen it years ago and hadn't rewatched it. So they were watching it, and it was very interesting seeing jokes from the film get laughs, because when you watch a film, there aren't any laughs. So it's really strange to see those jokes working.
Right. Mark's not used to having jokes get laughs.
Hey, how dare you? I reckon we've got time for one more.
Yeah, one more.
One more.
Yeah, so it's something I'm working on at the moment. It's only going to last maybe in.
Are you putting together a show for anything, or are you just putting together material for the club sets?
I'm always writing for the club sets. I'm trying to. I've got a solo show in the works.
Great,
but like in the climate right now, it's not about how fun you are. It's about how famous you are.
It's about those clicks, isn't it? About those likes
and clips.
Please like and subscribe.
Clips.
Remind yourself.
Thumbs up.
So this is something I'm working on at the moment is I've taken up, I've been doing martial arts like my whole life. And like at first I was doing ninjutsu, and that's, stealth combat and assassination. And then later I learned jujitsu, which is like grappling and like close quarter combat.
Because Brazilian jujitsu, that's like normal jujitsu, but you shave your pubes.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, ninjutsu, jujitsu, and then recently I've taken up fujitsu, which is how to mess up 500 people who work for the post office. So it's not quite, I was going to swear, but I was like, I'm not going to do it on the podcast. And I've got more to it. I've not quite nailed it now. Just like ultimately, you know, why couldn't the jury, why did the jury decide that the postmasters were guilty? It was they couldn't see over the horizon. Yeah, okay, niche again, horizon it's, software.
So have you tried these?
The first bit, not the second one.
Okay, so how did the first one do?
It's done well.
Great.
Fujitsu bit. It's not because it's a great joke. You can see the mechanical setup in it all.
It's great. Well, there's three in it. One, two, three. Yeah. Bang.
So you can see, so it's not a great joke, but it is topical. And so you get extra credit for being topical.
Mm.
Especially because it's kind of more or less just happened. It's the thing in the news at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to essentially, and then the,
so do you know that's got a shelf life? Yeah. Like, do you think there'd be a certain point where you go, well, that's done.
I think there's probably got a few weeks.
That's annoying.
It was
isn't
a
it?
National outrage, especially if you rate for about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's still
everyone still remembers it. It's still in the psyche, isn't it? But that is annoying if you there's nothing. It's annoying when you write a joke that's a banger and you know,
you just need another massive national scandal involving Fujitsu.
Yeah, well, I've found ways to spin off it.
Right.
But I still need to write them out properly and, you know, make each word count.
Yeah, yeah.
So that everyone understands where I'm going with it.
Have you got any of those?
I haven't formed it yet. I can give it a go here. Essentially, it's just, you know, if you, the guys, those who, you know, I don't know if they went to jail, but like who are charged with like fraud, you know, you can't mishandle people's.
Yeah, yeah, some of them did.
You can't mishandle people's finances and work for the post office and get away with it. To do that, you have to be a banker.
Yeah.
So I need to somehow make that work. I mean,
could build that. I'll get a round of applause if you get the rhythm right.
I just need to get the wording right. I only thought of this like last night, last bit.
Especially if you identify a banker in the audience at some point, then that can...
Steve?
Yeah, that can get an even bigger sort of bang if you sort of refer it to someone. But it's hard to get that information. Right. I mean, in London, there's a lot of bankers in audiences, aren't there? It comes up quite a lot, I think. But yeah.
That's... Yeah, if you find... Yeah, then we need to find a banker. I need to make sure, go find a banker and then come back to him.
Talk to the company
later on. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Need to do that. and the last bit that I've got is that, you know, if you work for the Royal Mail, you can't expect to get away with such a crime. But if you are a Royal Mail, you can expect to get away with anything.
Oh, that's a fucking right? Yeah.
Thank you. So yeah,
because that almost is like when
bloody
you go,
hell.
And it almost if you go, if you are a Royal Mail,
yeah,
you feel like they should get it before you even have to finish the sentence.
Yeah, so what I need to do is set up, basically, you know, this is an Epstein, Ghislaine, Maxwell, you know, and...
I've never known how to pronounce her name.
Or whatever the name is.
I just go giggly.
And the dodgy stuff that they did and how the royal family, or somebody in the royal family was involved in, you know, allegedly involved in that. So I need to set that up in a way that makes it work. And I think if I... It'll take me maybe a few days. And once I get it, I'll do it, record it, get it out there on social media so you can like and subscribe and click away, right? And then that's burnt. I don't have to worry about that.
There's certain
gags that will last you years. But once my what I tend to do is once I've done something and it's gone out on telly and then on the internet, on YouTube, I stop doing it. You give it a tour, you do it on tour, and then that's it. It's done forever. So anything you see me do on YouTube, you won't see me be doing on
Interesting.
Stage.
Interesting. The thing with the, once you've got the wording right for a post office joke, it's then you've just got to work out the
letters.
The delivery.
Right.
I mean, that flew by. Absolutely flew by. Thank you so much for coming in. Is there anywhere, where do you want to direct people to come and find you, like, follow, subscribe?
Oh, please come follow me on my social media on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. It's at Imran Yusuf Comedy. On Twitter, which I'm still calling it, it's just Imran Yusuf. But everywhere else, Imran Yusuf Comedy.
Yeah, Twitter's dead now, isn't it? Anyway, Danny, where can people find you?
Danny Ward, comedian.
And Jokes with Mark on my social media. We are cracking on with the tour in 2024. Tickets available at marksimmons.co.uk. Great stuff. Leave us a 5-star review if you would bloody love to.
And maybe also, if you're up for it, in the comments section, leave a nice comment or maybe your favourite joke. And
yes.
If it's one from somebody else and you know who wrote it, make sure you...
And that is on Apple Podcasts. So go leave those for us and then we will tell people the jokes. That'd be a bit of fun.
Bit of fun.
Anything more from you, Danny?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Danny. And remember...
Be more Gareth.
Hashtag Awooga.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.